You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Brandon Huffman is the national recruiting editor for 24/7 Sports. Seattle-based, man of the world. I'm going to ask him about recruiting. He's joining us now. Have you ever been called man of the world as you're being interviewed?
That's a first, but I'll take it. You know, I wonder what that status will get me.
Get you nothing, man. But still, get you cred on this show, Brandon. There's a media member in Tennessee, you know, in SEC country's different, who is essentially saying, hey, Oregon's just bought itself a recruiting class. And we're trying to figure out, you know, is that fair to Oregon, first of all? Also, is it accurate? Also, does it even matter? I want to talk a little bit about the different mentality in SEC country. But what do you make of that, Brandon, when you hear, you know, Dan Lanning and Oregon get accused of just buying a recruiting class?
I think that's usually what teams that aren't getting recruits are saying. It's never, hey, we got outworked, we got out-recruited, we got out-coached in a game. It's they bought themselves their class. They did something nefarious, and that's why we've been a second. And, I mean, you go back to when Chip Kelly landed Eric Armstead and DeAnthony Thomas before NIL even existed. And, you know, Oregon, it's not like Oregon just came out of the blue and started recruiting well in the last 2.5 years. They've been recruiting well for the last 15 to 20 plus years. I mean, you can go back to Haladi Nada to say it. So I think that's just, you know, kind of runner-up mentality, if you will.
Yeah, Igor Olshansky, Haladi Nada, those guys were not bad when you look back at players. Brandon, you know, some NIL collectives have got deeper pockets than others. That's obvious, but give me an idea of, you know, what are we talking about? Because I think part of the problem is, you know, we don't really know what these schools are spending.
I think if you remember a couple years ago when Ryan Day had a very specific number at which he said, you need $13 million to put together. I mean, I grew up in an era where everything was in five increments, 5,000, 10,000, 5 million, 10 million. His was very specific, 13 million. And now there was the talk coming out of Big Ten Media Day that he's got $20 million. What we're talking is a lot of bluster. Do I think that $20 million is the norm at a lot of schools? No. Do I think $20 million is even being hit at a few schools? Probably not. But the numbers, because there's no way to track them, are being thrown out ridiculously, and it's taken on a life of its own. And, I mean, you go back to the years of the bag man and the way people said, oh, well, I heard he got a duffel bag of cash for $250,000, and now the numbers just keep growing. Most of these people that run collectives are savvy businessmen. They're not just throwing millions of dollars in for an unproven player. Now, it might be different if it's a player out of the portal, but I don't think it's anywhere near the numbers that are consistently popping up. That said, I do think we are into the 7 and maybe 8 figures at some schools that do have those deeper pockets.
Oregon puts out a video last night or yesterday, 33 minutes in length. It looks like Hard Knocks, high production quality. Ty Burrell's narrating. It's just so wonderfully done. I don't know if you saw it, but I watched it and I went, gosh, if I'm a parent, I want to send my kid to Oregon. You know, what isn't a recruiting tool these days? And, you know, I look at what Oregon's doing and I go, gosh, they're always a step ahead.
It's funny because I'm old enough to remember when Oregon got the billboard in Times Square for Joey Harrington in, what, 2001. And so they've always been ahead of the curve. They've always been ahead of the rest of the country when it comes to marketing. And it was making Oregon a national brand. When I first started covering recruiting in 2003, it was kind of when USC was starting to hit their stride with Pete Carroll. And every kid was saying, I want to be the next Reggie Bush. I want to be used like Reggie Bush. And then in about 2012, Oregon was coming off playing for a national championship. For the last 12 years, if you ask a West Coast kid, who did you grow up rooting for, even if they lived in L.A., if they lived in Seattle, they lived in Phoenix, it was Oregon. So they appealed to the masses as a fan 20 years ago, but then that trickled down with the way they've been so adept at using social media, whether it's, you know, the reveal of uniforms. They just have done such a good job capturing, whether, when you said 33 minutes, I'm thinking, I've got teenagers. There's no way they're watching a 33-minute video. But you come out with a really good 33-second video, that's transfixing these kids' attention. And now you're winning national, or you're competing for national championships, you're winning Heisman trophies, you're having players get drafted. That is what has captured the imagination, the heart of high school recruits. But it started with making people know who Oregon was 23 years ago, and then it's just trickled down and using social media to their advantage for their target recruits.
Yeah, and I think they know who they are too, and it's such an interesting thing to see that. Other traditional powers, I think it's going to be really interesting in the next 2 years, Brandon, to kind of see who falls off, who surges ahead. What can you tell us in that space? We know Oregon's recruiting well. What else do you see in that space, you know, from teams that are name brand, blue bloods, whatever you want to call them?
Well, I think it's going to be dependent on who is willing to modernize their recruiting. And what I mean by that, I think it's pretty obvious. Who is going to be able to come up with the NIL that is being sought until there's some kind of cap put on it, until there maybe is a little bit more rules and regulation? Who is willing to do it? Because if you're looking, I mean, 2 years ago, after the 2022 season, Eli Drinkwitz was on potentially the hottest seat in the SEC. There was, outside of Jimbo Fisher. A year later, he signs an extension. Well, it coincides with Missouri offering NIL to high school players to stay in state, and they can start cashing in better. So now Missouri is somewhat of a blue blood. For years, people bemoan, how is Miami so mediocre with this tradition that they had in the 90s? Why can't Al Golden, why can't Randy Shannon, why can't Manny Diaz get it cracking? Well, then John Ruiz and Mario Cristobal start getting more involved in NIL, and all of a sudden their recruiting fortunes change. Now, you're going to have the Bamas, the Georgias that have had the history of putting players into the league, competing for national championships, and developing great players. They're still going to be good, but I think there's going to be more new money, more new faces than we've ever seen before, because those boosters now realize, I actually have a bigger impact in recruiting than I did before. When our team was 7-5, it didn't matter if your team was 7-5, but if you were 7-5 with deep pocketed boosters, you now have a chance to sit at the big boy table. So I think you're going to see some faces that we weren't used to seeing historically. And then I think those type of programs, like a Boise State, schools that were really good, maybe they're an unfair school to use because they're not a Power Four, sure, but the schools that were punching above their weight because of great coaching and great development and a great eye for evaluation, if those schools don't have the resources to compete, their days of competing are probably coming to an end.
Roster limits, 105 scholarships, if that is the number that teams use moving forward, it seems that we'll see some Power Four teams with deep pockets start to warehouse players. Do you think that happens, and is it good for the game?
I think it's good for the game in the sense that it gives a little bit more normalcy to the numbers. I mean, I think the reality is, if you're a walk-on, you're always going to kind of know you're a walk-on, whether the school's saying, hey, you know, we're going to give you NIL that's going to match what your scholarship would have been, but you're still going to be looked at as a walk-on from a talent standpoint. You're still going to be our ninth best running back that we're bringing in. Yeah, we're giving you a little extra cash, so you're not having to pay out of your own pocket, but your playing time is not going to be what a scholarship player would be. So I think it does give a little bit more manageable numbers, but what I think it's also going to do is that those G5 schools that are now being, you know, essentially eliminated or getting choked out of a chance to compete for a national championship, they get their one nominal playoff berth, they're going to be getting better players than they probably would have before, because guys are going to find out that, you know what, yeah, the NIL might not be bad, it might be worth it from a financial standpoint, but I want to play. I want to get on the field. I want to play after college, and if I'm not playing on my college team, probably not playing in the NFL. So I think this is going to, I don't see the big boys saying they want 105 guys on the roster. You know why? Because then that means that's now 80 guys you have to make happy rather than 65 guys you have to make happy because they're not playing like the starters are. So I think there's definitely some pluses to it, but I think some of the minuses will keep colleges from trying to have all 105 roster spots full.
How's Jed Fish in Washington doing right now with recruiting? They're right there. You probably have a good view of what their approach is and how they're doing. And give us an update on Washington.
I think that Jed Fish, when he came in and he said, we're going to have one of the best classes in the country, I think a lot of people kind of side-eyed him and said, you know, what Washington has been able to do recruiting the last 2 years with the season they've had have not really coexisted. You would have thought with their success the last two seasons that recruiting would have been better, and it wasn't. Now Jed Fish comes in, and they've got 7-8 four-star type players, and I don't think Washington's had this kind of recruiting kind of success since Chris Peterson was really hitting his stride at Washington in the late 2010s. And I think the biggest reason is that when you bring in a guy like Jed Fish, he was at a Power 5 school at Arizona, but he had spent time, obviously, at UCLA. He kind of knew the landscape. This isn't Kayla DeBoer coming from a Mountain West school. This isn't Jimmy Lake, who, you know, was just taking over for Chris Peterson. This was Fish, who had to basically build a program from scratch after Kevin Sumlin impaled it, and he brought on assistant coaches at Arizona who could recruit, and that's how you get it to Torrey McMillan and a Jacob Manu and a Noah Fifita. Well, now he's doing it at a school that, while the roster may have changed from the team that played for a national title, the university played for a national title 6-7 months ago. So these kids still see Washington as being the team that just played for a national championship. And he, with his energy and ability to recruit, and then the reality is, just even throwing the name Steve Belichick around, you know, certainly Brendan Carroll, especially with Northwest kids who are very familiar with Pete Carroll. Those give you the credibility when you're trying to build something new at Washington. And I think he's done a very good job of recruiting. And I think better than anybody who was paying attention from the jump thought was even possible this early on.
You covered and know Jaden Robinson well. I wrote about him over the weekend. Great story at Oregon State. Such an inspiring story with his mother putting he and his brother on a Greyhound bus, living in a homeless shelter in downtown Seattle. For you, that vantage point of seeing a kid that you're familiar with sort of make it and break through and now facing a really important big season in college, like, what do you make of Jaden Robinson and that story at Oregon State?
Well, what I love about it, too, is that, you know, mom realized there was going to be sacrifices being made, but she played the long game, and she bet on her son. And I think one of the great things about Jaden, I remember in his recruitment, he only had one offer, and it was from the University of Hawaii. And there's nothing wrong with going to Hawaii. I mean, who wouldn't want to spend their year round, especially being in the Northwest? Who wouldn't want to go to Hawaii? But he didn't sign early. That was the first recruiting class where there was an early signing period, and he didn't commit. And he said, I think that I want to stay, you know, close to home, and hopefully something materializes. Well, Jonathan Smith recruits him at Washington, goes down and sees him at Auburn Riverside, then he gets to Oregon State and brings him in. And Jaden even bet on himself, knowing his mom made sacrifices. He's potentially turning down this scholarship offer with no guarantee that there's going to be one. And then one comes, he now becomes a crucial part of their turnaround. He becomes really the defensive face of that program. He's right through Corvallis. I saw when I was there in the spring, I saw posters with him on the streets in Corvallis, and he's become such an identifiable force. And when a roster was as decimated by transfers as Oregon State was, and this guy may be thinking, with my seventh year, maybe I need to go to a bigger school that's going to play a better schedule, but he stays, he's going to endear himself to that fan base far more than his play alone has endeared him. It's going to be, this guy stuck with this when everybody else was leaving. Everybody else was maybe looking for a bigger spotlight, but he realizes what Oregon State meant to him and what it did for him, and now he wants to reciprocate that. And you just can't help root for a kid who overcame these obstacles that he did growing up, and now he's walking away with multiple degrees. He's going to have a chance to get into a camp, if not get drafted next year, and really be that heart and soul of Trent Bray's first team.
Oregon State also getting a commitment from class of 26 quarterback Deegan Rose. I went to Central California. I watched the kid work out, got a chance to spend some time with him, good head on his shoulders. But how concerned should Oregon State be about holding that commitment? You know, what does that mean? You work and live in that world.
Well, first of all, that was a heck of insight by you to go down and see him. And then a few months later, he commits to Oregon State. I remember when you reached out and said, hey, I'm going to see him. And this is a kid that I think, you know, Auburn had offered him. Oregon had offered him. Oregon brought him on. He came in on an unofficial visit, had the offer reaffirmed to him. Oregon had a couple of other quarterbacks that they were in on in 2026. But he was immediately a take for the Ducks. And he just really felt that connection with Ryan Gunderson. He really liked what Trent Bray is building there. He loved his time with Gundy. And I think if he didn't have any other big offers, then maybe there's a reason to panic. Maybe there's a reason to worry. But he had offers from Oregon and from Auburn after his spring, when he chose Oregon State. So he knew what he had. He had the opportunity to go to the SEC. He had the opportunity to go to the Big Ten, and he still chose Oregon State. And he's the kind of kid that when he makes that commitment, he probably sticks with that commitment and then some. And then in addition, probably becomes kind of a Pied Piper. And if I'm a receiver and I know that Oregon State's got a quarterback of his caliber coming in, and that Fresno area, there is some very good talent that just does not get recruited all that much because coaches don't want to make the extra effort to get to the Central Valley. They want to go to Southern California. They want to go to the Bay Area or Sacramento. They don't want to get a Fresno, but if they see a Deegan Rose going there, they'll be like, hey, if he's willing to go there, I want to go there. I like the vibe there. I like the feeling there. And I know I'm going to have a good guy getting me the ball. I think that this could end up being such a huge commitment, not just for Ryan Gunderson and Trent Bray, but for Oregon State in the very near future, that guys are still believing in what they're building there.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I went down and I talked to the kid. I watched him work out at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and he talked about wanting to play. And so I thought, gosh, Fresno State and Jeff Tedford would be a great place for him. When I saw that Tedford, you know, said he had health issues and he was resigning, I thought, whoa, that's interesting, because it kind of takes them out of the running for it. And certainly I think Oregon State is excited about it, and I think fans are excited about it. And Brandon Huffman, you do such a good job, 24/7 Sports. Read him, follow him. Brandon, thank you for giving us your time.
You bet, John. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
There he is in Seattle. I love the range that he's got. He can talk about recruiting. He can talk about kids. He knows them all. He knows the players. It wasn't that I had like great insight. I knew that Oregon had offered him. I knew Oregon State wanted him. I was in Central California heading there for a high school graduation. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go see this kid throw. And he happened to be working out the morning I was there. And to the credit of the Clovis High School football coach, they let me sit in on meetings. They let me watch film of the kid. They let me stand out on the practice field, like, you know, right behind the offense as the offense is working on 7-on-7, just to kind of watch the kid, and wrote all about Deegan Rose before his commitment. I was not shocked that he picked Oregon State, because he was talking about wanting to play as a freshman. He wants to go somewhere and he wants to play. He doesn't want to sit for 3 years. He certainly doesn't want to get into a program, try to develop and have programs that, you know, some of the formula for some of the bigger schools that are in the Power Four, like Oregon, is go get Bo Nix, go get Dylan Gabriel, go get the next guy. I didn't think that Deegan Rose wanted to sit around and wait to play. And so he'll get a chance at Oregon State if that commitment holds. Our big splash is coming up. Jake Dickert, Washington State coach, 4 o'clock. Be here.